Magneto, I don't really care if haters really don't agree though. Killers in the streets and they weapon this police, claiming they ain't got no beef or steady, only eating keto. But we about to change that today. Your clans with guns and badges, they won't be safe. Your pipes that poison lands, no, they won't be safe. It's time to fight with us or get backed away. Because revolution steady right on the itinerary. I'm sick of seeing all my people in obituaries. Stay mad, Karen, we don't give an F-bomb. Blow it up by any means necessary. Have to say that I could be a revolutionary. I believe it, I can feel it in my capillaries. We out here and we showing no fear. Revolution's coming near, you don't want us as an adversary.
Fight the power!
Fight the power!
Sound. And you know we say fight the power.
Fight the power.
This is how the revolution sound.
Hey,
and you know we say
how the richest on the earth got so many needs. I'm a giant, so they looking like my mini-me's. Never been a killer, but the world is tempting me. Steady killing me, but would never put an end to me. Fight the power, so in public, I'm the enemy. Privately contented with intentions of my energy. System all cap, feel like Kaepernick when he in the league. Overcoming haters like John Taylor, we in the lead. I deserve this gold medal. It's from the soil where we once settled. They want to spoil everyone's ghetto. My future son is about to know the level of expectation to be a black man in this generation. Because this time, the revolution will be televised. Bringing the evolution of mankind. When you hear me speak, you can tell I'm wise. Truth set us free, that's why they tell us lies. Questioning everything I recognize.
Fight the power!
Fight the power!
This is how the revolution sound. And you know we say fight the power!
Fight the power!
This is how the revolution sound. And you know we say
you can murder a liberator, but you can't murder liberation. You can murder a revolutionary, but you can't murder revolution. Freedom fighter, but you can't murder freedom. Hey, revolutionary. Hey, revolutionary.
You want a revolution?
It's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming.
Views from the ground.
Views from the damn ground.
Views from the ground.
Views from the damn ground.
Views from the ground.
Views from the damn ground.
And that's on that, and that on that. Welcome back. This is everyone's favorite agender host, DJ Love. I use they, them pronouns. And we are here live in the studio on KFAIN WFNU Frogtown Radio. We have Adam back in the house.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How you been doing? What you been up to?
You know, I have been getting all over town, traveling, trying to like make sure that I, you know, have everything lined up. You, as a, you know, indie performer, you gotta just like constantly be working at it. So that's what I'm doing, you know.
Yeah, you are constantly working too. Every time I see something about you, you're like, I'm in this state, I'm in that state. I was like, I love that for you. So.
You know, I love it for me too. I love to travel, so this is nice. But I, as I was saying, I love to come home and do a big show at home. So I'm excited about doing one of those. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, so. So what brings you into the program today?
So this has been planned for a long time. Yeah. People have come up to me recently and been like, how did you know? Did you know this was going to happen? But no, I did not know. So I've been planning a D'Angelo tribute show, and we've been calling it the D'Angelo tribute show, the charade. at Crooners. That's coming up in a couple weeks. It's October 29th at Crooners, Wednesday, October 29th. And this week, people have just been messaging me all day, and I was like, "What's going on?" And it turns out that D'Angelo has died at the age of 51 of pancreatic cancer, which might be shocking to some people listening, but it's really rocked the musician world, especially. Like, his music is obviously very commercial, but also very appealing to a lot of musicians, and that's why we wanted to do a tribute show to begin with. We were very excited about doing it because musicians are just gonna love it, and you can't do it wrong. So, like, I mean, you can do it badly, but you can't. His music is just so good that it's hard to mess it up. So, we put it together a long time ago, and then when we found out that he was passing, I was just like distraught, and it really, really rocked the musician world. And I'm sure the radio world as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's actually really interesting because yesterday I was at work and I got a text message from you.
Yeah.
And I went outside, went on break, and I was just baffled. I was it just hit me so hard that it just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where he was struggling secretly for a long time. I've become an expert on it in the last like couple of days because people just sending me messages like, "Did you know this? Did you know that?" So he was struggling secretly with it, and nobody knew it was coming, so it really came out of nowhere when it actually happened, I went on live the other day just to like let everybody know the show is still going and give my sorrows, and I definitely am very sorry for his son, who was Angie Stone's son as well, and she passed in March, and it's just like, wow, like it's really wild. It's really disturbing, and it's so sad that we lost such a genius at such a young age, you know.
And you talked a lot about what D'Angelo means to a lot of singers. Mm. Can you tell us what D'Angelo means to you personally as a singer?
Oh, yeah. I, like a lot of people, I came across D'Angelo initially, and not like most people, but like a lot of people, on the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill album, where he was singing Nothing Really Matters. And that... I was like, this was the first experience that I'd had as a young man listening to such a personal song by two incredible singers. And then obviously I didn't jump on it immediately, but I heard Voodoo, the album Voodoo, and I listened to that back to front, up and down. My brother, I stole it from my brother and listened to it. And that's where most people got connected with him, because obviously the How Does It Feel music video, where you know it was alluded to that something was going on below screen right there, and that was like the big and that, you know, genius marketing on his part, but then everybody saw that video, and then everybody got Voodoo, and then that same with me, I got Voodoo, and then I got Brown Sugar, and then I just was like obsessed ever since then, and I went to see him at Afropunk in 2014. And it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. The whole crowd, he was an hour and a half late, but we were all just like absolutely in love with him and just screaming at the top of our voices. And he means that, you know, like it means a lot to me to get this amazing crew of musicians together to like really work, like do his music as good as we possibly can. You know, I'm not going to say where the roots are or like D'Angelo, but we are incredible local musicians and very excited to do it, you know.
Tell us again where the show is going to be.
The show is at Crooners on October 29th. Yeah, it's a full show with just got some amazing local cats, yeah.
Yeah, what time?
It is at 7 o'clock.
All right. And what is the first song that you've chosen by D'Angelo, and tell us a little bit why.
So the first song I chose was How Does It Feel? And that I chose that song because of the video, because of like a lot of like it's his anthem in to a lot of people. And I feel like a lot of people like personally feel an intimate moment and love for him deep down in their hearts when they hear it. Yeah.
Welcome back to Views from the Ground.
Views from the damn ground.
We are here with Adam, and we are listening to D'Angelo songs. We just got done listening to How Does It Feel? And the next one coming up is going to be Spanish Joint. So what made you choose that song, Adam?
So, D'Angelo himself is like very music focused. Like the music that he puts out is very music focused. And this song is like every musician's favorite song because it's one of those songs. It's one of those things that has amazing like licks in it that everybody just like constantly listens to. And you probably heard it if you haven't heard the song, just people playing them in the streets, you know.
Here we go with Spanish Joint by D'Angelo.
Give me a little bit, don't talk bad, yeah.
Welcome back to Views from the Ground.
Views from the damn ground.
We are live in the studio here with Adam. We just got done listening to two of D'Angelo's songs. And go ahead and tell them about the show one more time.
Yeah, so the show is at Crooner's, Crooner's Supper Club in Minneapolis. It's going to be at October 29th at 7 p.m. So come on down.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate you coming and sharing your insights on D'Angelo.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
With that being said, we're going to have Nico G take it away. So,
welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to another edition of 15 with Nico G. My name is Nico Georgiadis. I'm an independent journalist, filmmaker, and co-founder of Unicorn Riot. You can find my work at nicog.work and unicornriot.ninja. Thanks again, DJ, and to the amazing listeners at KFAI. I'm here for 15 minutes during every month's third Wednesday, examining and connecting views from the ground locally and internationally. Tonight, we're going to stay here in America, and we're going to talk about NSPM7. And the erosion of civil rights in this country currently called America that we are living in. At this point in the second non-consecutive term of President Trump, we're witnessing a regime who's taken off their gloves and are acting with impunity while they revise history, dog whistle for their white supremacist base, and start to wage a political vengeful war against any dissent in the growing non-mega population. Obviously, I'm not saying anything new to you all as we're all watching this far-right's technocratic, fascist, totalitarian, and takeover together. One of the scarier new directives of this regime is the National Security Presidential Memorandum 7, or NSPM 7, that was signed just in September, on September 25th, 2025. This is a presidential action titled Countering Domestic Terrorism and Organized Political Violence. And this directs governmental authorities to dismantle what they've conceived as a nationwide left-wing terrorism campaign. The Brennan Center, who studies domestic terrorism and far-right terrorists, they said this, citing an imagined left-wing conspiracy, the president is threatening any person or group holding any one of a broad array of disfavored views with investigation and prosecution. 3 days before NSPM 7 was enacted, Trump designated anti-fascism, Antifa, as terrorism in an executive order that he titled Designating Antifa as a Domestic Terrorist Organization. In this order, it's noted, here's the quotes, that all relevant executive departments and agencies shall utilize all applicable authorities to investigate, disrupt, and dismantle any and all illegal operations, especially those involving terrorist actions conducted by Antifa or any person claiming to act on behalf of Antifa or for which Antifa or any person claiming to act on behalf of Antifa provided material support, including necessary investigatory and procedural actions against those who fund such operations. Going on in one of the press conferences, Donald Trump mentioned George Soros as one of the funders, and Reid Hoffman as one of the funders of Antifa. And so it seems like their targets is their political opponents that they're calling funders of a terrorist organization. Their political opponents are now terrorists or funders of terrorism. Essentially, we're seeing an openly fascist government start their now legalized crackdown on any opponent that they want, going after the funders and supporters of anti-fascism or anything they deem as anti-fascism. In a recent White House panel on Antifa, which was headed by Trump, Pam Bondi, and Kristi Noem, so the top, sort of the top cops in this country. It was not an SNL skit. The regime like has so much misinformation and so much lies. What Kristi Noem said was that they had arrested the girlfriend of a co-founder of Antifa and would glean information from her to dismantle the network across the country. So in their eyes, they think Americans are so stupid that they would believe that the co-founder of Antifa and anti-fascism, the idea sprouted from fascism in the 1900s, the co-founder's girlfriend was just arrested in Portland, and they're going to dismantle the networks based off of that. So from the day of the signing, on September 25th, 2025, I wanted to play this audio from the White House, because this gives their reasonings, their thoughts behind it. First, you're going to hear the White House Staff Secretary Will Scharf, who's mainly the one who gives Trump the memorandums and talks about the memorandums beforehand. He's a legal representative in the White House. He's with the Trump, Team Trump. Second is you're going to hear Trump. And the third, you're going to hear the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, Stephen Miller, who's a character. If you look into Miller's speech after Charlie Kirk was killed, he almost plagiarized Joseph Goebbels, one of the main narrators of the Nazi party in the 30s in Germany. So, like, this regime is not hiding who they are. And as most of the Republicans, when they do get in power, they do not hide or put cloaks around or put capes around. They don't hide who they are. Their racism shows, their, you know, anti-blackism shows, their white supremacy shows. So take a listen.
Lastly, sir, this is a presidential memorandum on countering domestic terrorism and organized political violence. In recent weeks, months, and years, we've seen a tremendous upsurge in some highly visible, but also other acts of domestic terrorism and organized political violence being perpetrated by radical, politically motivated groups all over the country. What this presidential memorandum will do is set off an administration-wide response to that, ranging from the Joint Terrorism Task Forces to other components of the Department of Justice, to the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Treasury. We're looking at interdicting these groups, preventing them from performing acts of violence, and also looking at sources of organization and funding and support that prop them up and allow them to do the acts that they have been doing.
We're looking at the funders of a lot of these groups. And, you know, when you see the signs, and they're all beautiful signs made professionally, these aren't your protesters that make the sign in their basement late in the evening because they really believe it. These are anarchists and agitators, professional anarchists and agitators, and they get hired by wealthy people, some of whom I know, I guess, you know, I probably know them. And you wouldn't know it. You're at dinner with them, everything's nice, and then you find out that they funded millions of dollars to these lunatics. Steve, could you say a couple of words?
Yes, Mr. President. This is a very historic and significant day. This is the first time in American history that there is an all-of-government effort to dismantle left-wing terrorism, to dismantle Antifa, to dismantle the organizations that have been carrying out these acts of political violence and terrorism. What we have seen, if you look at whether it be going back to the riots that started with Black Lives Matter and all the way through to the Antifa riots, the attacks on ICE officers, the doxing campaigns, and now the political assassinations, these are not lone, isolated events. This is part of an organized campaign of radical left terrorism. It is structured, it is sophisticated, it is well-funded, it is well-planned. There is really no parallel like this to anything else in the country right now. There is an entire system of feeder organizations that provide money, resources, weapons, and when they're attacking ICE officers, they're attacking federal buildings, or they're isolating public officials for harassment, doxing, intimidation, and ultimately attempted assassination, it is all carefully planned, executed, and thought through. It is terrorism on our soil. Because of this executive order, Cash and Pam are going to have the tools they need, working with Scott, to take these organizations apart piece by piece. And the central hub of that effort is going to be the Joint Terrorism Task Force, or JTTF, which sits inside the Federal Bureau of Investigation. But for those at home who are worried about terrorism in this country, they need to understand, because of President Trump's strength, because of his vision, because of his leadership, we are now going to use the entire force of the federal government to uproot these organizations root and branch. And again, that's only possible because of President Trump and his leadership.
So that was from the White House. Now, written in the memoranda is, quote, "There are common recurrent motivations and indicia uniting this pattern of violent and terrorist activities under the umbrella of self-described anti-fascism." This is a reading from the memoranda again. These movements portray foundational American principles, e.g. support for law enforcement and border control, as fascist to justify and encourage acts of violent revolution. This anti-fascist lie has become the organizing, rallying cry used by domestic terrorists to wage a violent assault against democratic institutions, constitutional rights, and fundamental American liberty. Common threads animating this violent conduct include anti-Americanism, anti-capitalism, and anti-Christianity, support for the overthrow of the United States government, extremism on migration, race, and gender, and hostility towards those who hold traditional American views on family, religion, and morality. As described in the order of September 22, 2025, designating Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization, the groups and entities that perpetuate this extremism have created a movement that embraces and elevates violence to achieve policy outcomes, including justifying additional assassinations. For example, Charlie Kirk's alleged assassin engraved the bullets used in the murder with so-called anti-fascist rhetoric, unquote. So as you heard Stephen Miller say, they were directing all facets of federal law enforcement to go after their political enemies, using the Joint Terrorism Task Force, JTTF. Here's another quote. The United States requires a national strategy to investigate and disrupt networks, entities, and organizations that foment political violence so that law enforcement can intervene in criminal conspiracies before they result in violent political acts. Very important information right there. They're setting federal officials to investigate and disrupt networks, and doing so before they can result in violent political acts. Journalist Ken Klippenstein has been covering the new directive, and he says this. It's hard to overstate how much different NSPM 7 is from the other 200 executive orders Trump has frantically signed since coming back into office. An executive order publicly lays out the course of day-to-day federal government operations, whereas a national security directive, which this is a sweeping policy decree for the defense, foreign policy, intelligence, and law enforcement apparatus. National security directives are often secret, but in this case, the Trump admin chose to publish NSPM 7, only the seventh since he's come into office. NSPM 7 directs a new national strategy to disrupt any individuals or groups that foment political violence, including before they result in violent political acts. In other words, Klippenstein says, they're targeting pre-crime. For the Trump White House, the beauty of using an already existing network is that it bypasses congressional oversight and scrutiny and even obscures federal activity to governors and legislatures at the state level. States and cities and local police have already signed memoranda of agreements with the feds to fight terrorism, and officers are already assigned as task force officers. So many White House staff and even the racist counterterrorism czar, Sebastian Gorka, they're blaming all of the left in general for the killing of Charlie Kirk. And Trump is basically unleashing the feds and what they deem as the problem, any of their opponents. You know, we saw Muslims be the boogeyman for decades after 9/11 and the Patriot Act, which actually went through Congress. It wasn't a national directive by President Bush. It went through Congress. The Patriot Act actually opened the doors for mass surveillance and special operation drone murders from Obama across the globe. So we've seen in this last 9 months, they've been coming for black people. They've been coming for brown people, disabled people, trans folks. Soon, they might be coming for your governor or your elected representatives or your neighbors or you. Oof, sometimes that we're living in. Meanwhile, in Britain, they have a similar terrorism charge for anyone who supports the actionist group Palestine Action. And they're getting elders who show up at a protest with a sign and charging them with terrorism. Well, I'd rather not end with such depressing news, so let's focus on some good news. Remember when the youth led the global uprising against anti-blackness and police terror, starting in Minneapolis after the police murdered George Floyd? Who would have turned 52 yesterday? And then the youth rose up for Palestine across college campuses worldwide? Well, the youth of the world are at it again. There's this sweeping Gen Z protest that have already deposed multiple authoritarian leaders across the world. In Nepal, the prime minister was forced to resign after masses of youth took to the streets. That revolution was probably, maybe, the fastest in modern history. Digital platforms were used to elect a new leader, and they already have that interim new leader. The revolution happened within a week in Nepal. Also, the youth are leading uprisings in Indonesia, Philippines, Sri Lanka, Madagascar, Morocco, Peru, France, Italy, Maldives, Paraguay, Serbia, among others. Many of these protests are due to the economic inequalities, a rise in government corruption, and the government responses to environmental and infrastructure crises. Hundreds have been killed in these countries, and many more arrested by the government forces. But the protests are proving to be successful. So that's something to keep an eye on over the rest of this year. And locally, we have the local elections in a few weeks. And with that, our time has run out. Thank you so much for listening to October's 15 with Nico G. Check out my work at nicog.work and unicornriot.ninja. Back to you, DJ.
Support for KFAI comes from the Dakota, presenting L.A. Buckner and Big Homie Saturday, November 8th. Minneapolis drummer L.A. Buckner's fusion project, Big Homie, incorporates gospel, R&B, hip-hop, funk, and African rhythms into its foundational jazz bass. Their album, Northside, pushes the boundaries of the Minneapolis sound into new jazz funk and soul-adjacent territories. More information about L.A. Buckner and Big Homie at the Dakota is available at dakotacooks.com.
Welcome back to Views from the Ground.
Views from the Dam Ground.
Yes, and we are here with Brixton Hughes. Brixton Hughes. How are you doing?
All right. Well, yeah, I was doing a little bit more upbeat before that last segment, but...
tell us, you do a lot of, I would call it journalism.
Okay.
For BLM, and other various movement groups, and I see you all the time, and you do a lot of good work.
Thank you.
And you've also been out doing the work for a while.
Yeah, for about 10 years or so. The video camera and lots of spare time.
So the first thing I want to start with is, you know, like, tell us a little bit about your upbringing.
Well, I was born in Chicago, grew up outside of Detroit, pretty much basic, typical suburban white kid life, went to college. Went to graduate school, got a PhD, started a lab, you know, American dreams type stuff.
Yeah. So what inspired you to start going to protest?
I just felt uncomfortable in the place where I was because I'd started to understand that the way I was taught and the way I was brought up was not the way the world actually was or the way this part of the world actually was. And I just wanted to go out and find out more about it.
And what is one of the first times that you started to go to protest?
Probably one of the first one. I just put up a video from that now. It was a protest in St. Paul. We shut down the light rail for a little while for Mike Brown in, I think, 2015. And I was there. It intrigued me. I mean, I had been out to protest previous anti-war, anti-globalization, but that was a whole different mentality and a whole different process. But here locally, that was the first.
Okay. And did that inspire you to get into the movement more?
Yeah. I mean, it felt good to me to be back in the streets and standing up with people. So I went out and did more of that, and I eventually started to meet people who are associated with the movement and talk to them and build some trust, and now here we are today, 10 years later.
Yeah. What are some of the activities that you used to do when you were younger, too, as an artist?
Well, I wrote things. And then when I showed them to other people, they told me they were poems, so I started to call myself a poet, just kind of like the journalist thing, right? I show people what I do. They, oh, yeah, that's journalism. In the early 90s, my first wife was killed in an automobile accident, and I took that pretty hard. And I really wrote more. And then when I got to Minneapolis, it was part of my healing journey, if you want to call it that, that I felt like I needed to do that in public. So I started going out to open mics and reading, and eventually I ended up hosting open mic and things like that. So yeah. One thing leads to another. It's never planned. There's not a big plan here.
Yeah, I feel that. And I just think, you know, it's also important to show the community that you were building as well. Like, open mic is a lot about community as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important.
Yeah, we did that quite a bit. I mean, at the time, I had a pretty good job working at the university. And, you know, a lot of the people who came into the open mic were, you know, during the day, they were out in the streets busking in the parks, whatever, and then they'd come in there once a week and we could give them a meal and just have some community and camaraderie, a place where they could be comfortable.
So that brings us to you working with Nakima at some point, right?
Yeah. It was kind of a long story how I first came aware of Nakima. I got some park board video pirated to me. Maybe I shouldn't say that in public. Anyway, and for one purpose, but all that was in the park board meetings was Nakima and Raisha and all them disrupting the park board meetings for a whole nother issue that we don't, Muhammad Yunus, anyway. And I was like, wow, this is the real story here, you know. So, and then when Nakima announced to run for mayor, I went to one of her first fundraisers and introduced myself to her, and well, I've been following her around ever since.
So we've talked a lot about the stuff you did in the movement, you know, like pre-2020. So tell us about the uprising in 2020.
Well, I've always said, you know, it took off from Minneapolis. We call it ground zero, right? I think that's where your views from the ground come from, right? And there was a reason why. One was, I think, the way that everyone became aware of the murder of George Floyd. It was, you know, not two quick shots. It was long and intent. But we already had a springboard here. As I sometimes say, we were the bottle for the rocket of George Floyd, and it just took off from here. Prior to that, there was already an ongoing movement from the occupation at the 4th Precinct to shutting down the Mall of America to things like that. So we were ready for that.
And how did that affect the work that you did?
It would just cranked it up. Like if it was a boiling pot, that just cranked the heat right up. We went from having events maybe one a month, if that, to like four or five a day. Things were all over town. Things were burning. People were angry. People were unangry. It was quite a time.
And so what inspires you to keep coming out?
Well, I learn a lot. I mean, I'm book educated. I spent a lot of time in universities and laboratories. But I tell people a lot, this is like a secondary education, you know, going out, listening to people and just finding out what's going on and following it. And I like that. And I feel as though we're doing a good thing. I mean, I know we just listened to Nico and the other side has all sorts of nasty ideas about what we're doing, but I really don't feel that. I feel almost the most safe when I'm at a rally or when I'm in a march.
And tell us a little bit about the platform that you've made and you're able to share with people in the community.
Well, I see what we do at New Year's Video Feed or CDDF Productions. I see it me as really like a megaphone, right? You go to a rally and you amplify your voice, and I feel like I'm doing that, but kind of after the fact. For how many decades and centuries, people like me white people or stepping on black and brown people to raise ourselves up, right? So I feel in some way I'm becoming a platform for other voices, kind of inverting that historical trend. I mean, I'm just one person, but...
Yeah, and I think the work that you do is important. You know, I appreciate all the local journalists that we have here. And yeah, and just tell us about how you feel about local journalism here in Minneapolis. You know, with King Demetrius, my uncle, shout out, you know, Georgia Ford. We just got done listening to Nico.
Well, we have an amazing group of independent journalists and independent media producers here in the Twin Cities. I mean, you just mentioned a lot of them, but there's more photographers and video, and just the directions that people are taking. I mean, Georgia is building her own network. Toussaint's got his own media outlet. I mean, it's everywhere. And it just grows. We all support each other and prop each other up. So I think, you know, there's... We're ready for all this restriction on the media coming from the government, because few of us really need too much government support. I mean, I don't need government support at all. I just need them to stay the hell out of my way, basically.
And as someone, you said you were talking about your first protest in 2015. So we're coming up on 10 years of you being locally here in this movement. What have you noticed has changed in those 10 years?
Well, you know, the faces and the people come and go because people take, you know, you need to take time off. You need to take care of yourself. I think it's gotten bigger with more interests, and now... There seems to be some conflicting of interests, and I hope we can work that out.
And what have you seen in the last 10 years for the local journalists?
It's been nothing but gross. It's been nothing but growth. And it's just to our advantage, everyone in the Twin Cities' advantage, I think that you have these alternatives to even, you know, to broadcast.
And where are places that people can do your work?
Well, I'm pretty much at the time, I'm only on Facebook. I sometimes give videos to other people that they put other places. But I'm working on trying to take it out into the public. Coming up at the end of the month, October 30th, there's a, I think I can talk about this, a tribute to Assata Shakur at the UROC on Plymouth, 6 to 8 p.m. And I think I'm going to have some way of distributing a video documentary I made about the Assata Shakur chant through a more cooperative method than locking people in a dark room and telling them to be quiet and watch the film.
Yes, that's super cool. And
I sure hope it works out. I mean, I would like to find a way to bring the video more into a public viewing, like when people go to an art gallery, right? The art's on the wall and they interact with it, but they mostly interact with the people around them. And I would like to find ways to make video more amenable to that.
Yes. So if someone wanted to find the videos that are on your Facebook, how would they find your Facebook?
Well, you could go to Brixton Hughes or the New Hughes video feed.
Yeah. And
Hughes like the aircraft company.
So yeah, I think that's real important. We're going to take a quick break real fast and cool. We'll be right back.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue presenting Cuckoo Wednesday, October 22nd. Cuckoo returns to the First Avenue stage with his latest release, Brighton.
It's an album that mixes Latina boleros and música romántica to pay homage to the brown-eyed soul that reflects Cuckoo's Chicano roots.
More information about Cuckoo at First Avenue is available at first-avenue.com.
All right. Welcome back here to Views from the Ground.
Views from the Damn Ground.
So, yeah, we are. Tell us a little bit about Acerdity.
Well, when I had a public access show during the GWB administration, we played off Absurdity because we were trying to be like cartoons, you know, like the cartoons, South Park and them and the Simpsons. They can do things that live action really can't do. And so we approached it Absurdity. But this dude, you know, you heard Nico. I mean, on one level, I'm like, this is so absurd. This is, how can you match that? I can't match that level of absurdity that this orange dude came up with. So I turned to reality instead.
Yeah. And I completely agree because, you know, sometimes you read or hear things and you think it's a joke and it's reality. So I feel like for my generation, that we used to have this thing called The Onion. And The Onion used to post some really crazy headline, and it was this fake newspaper. And then you go, ha, 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 that's so funny because it almost seems realistic, but we know it's a joke. But it just doesn't work anymore because it just all seems real now. Like, everything seems possible. Like, I read something crazy, and I was like, oh, that's not even a joke, is it? Like, that just happened.
Yeah, I find it the other way. It worked. Like, I'll read something, I'll be like, no, that can't, you know. Come on. But then you find out that's really what happened. And I'm like, oh, man, you know, they've got me so disjointed from reality. And I was never that good with reality anyway, so.
Yeah. Yes, I have given in to the absurdity. I just assume it's, like, yep, that sounds like it's true. I'll look into it, but.
And I mean, I guess that's part of what keeps bringing me back to the events and listening to people, because I don't see a lot of absurdity there, right? I mean, that's my touchstone to reality. They got me anchored, you know.
Yes, they do. So with that being said, I want to thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate the work that you're doing, you know, especially like the archival work that you have been doing. For all the many voices for the last decade, and we just appreciate what you do.
Oh, I appreciate being here. The show, pay attention.
Yes. With that being said, we're going to have some Mariah Carey, My Own.
Living in the memory. But that same politician will not answer phone when you go. And here comes the policeman. He say that he protect and serve. But that same policeman beat you down face to the curb. And here comes the educator. She say that she teaches story. But that same educator never cared to learn the real story. And here comes the entertainer. He claimed that he's a great prophet. But that same entertainer sell his soul just to make profit. No more smoking members, no rabbit in that. We know all of your tricks. No more liars, no cheaters, no grifters, no frauds, and no more hypocrites. No, you cannot fool us anymore. No, you cannot fool us anymore. The president who won the Nobel Prize for Peace, same man who bombed the whole Middle East. The mayor say he gonna put the public first. Same mayor wore those tents with pigs in public works. You know some people that be working in nonprofit. Same people stealing money, put it in their pocket. The activists that say they trying to lead the way. Same activists who working for the city pay. So you can let them fools take their gold. But I never let the fool take my soul. So you can let them fools take their gold. But I never let the fool take my soul. So you can